Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. My name is Andrew McPeak, and I'm your co-host, Tim. This is going to be a good conversation.
Yes, it is. It's one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, well, I think they're all good conversations, of course, but that's why I'm here. So, but what's really exciting is recently you got to go with some of our team members to a conference where you were working with educational leaders. It sounds like it was a great time.
It was. It was in chilly Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
We had a fun time. Great city. But it was a conference for decision makers in education. So they were curriculum designers, heads of schools, principals,
That's
APs.
Incredible.
Yeah, really, really sharp people.
And you led a number of sessions with them.
I did. And what we're going to talk about today, Andrew, is of the four sessions that I did, clearly the most passionate topic for them to weigh in, get excited about, was this topic today on metacognition.
Yeah. And our listeners might have heard of that word. It's actually one of those words that's kind of taking the education world, especially by storm. But I think other industries are saying, what are you guys doing over there? We want to learn from that, especially when it comes to leading the next generation.
So, absolutely.
So yeah. Talk to us about that term. Like, where did you first hear about it? Where did you discover that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Metacognition is actually two words together that forms a word that's huge. Meta means behind. And then cognition is the act of knowing. So it's thinking what's behind your knowing. We all know that when we instruct an employee, teach a student, or coach an athlete, you want them to own what they're learning.
Absolutely.
But very often, we the teachers are the ones that own it. We do most of the work. We do the lesson plan. We do the X's and O's on the chalkboard. And they're kind of passive as they write
it. And then we ask them to care.
You know? That's right. Yeah. So metacognition is really the art of passing on ownership to the young person that you're teaching. And who in the world doesn't want to do that? So Eric Mazur is really the one that made this popular. In fact, the whole flip classroom movement really got popular with this Harvard professor. Eric is a physics professor at Harvard University who years ago was acknowledging that even though he taught some of the smartest students in the world, he was really stunned at how much they didn't know.
Mm.
And these are the AP class kids in high school.
Absolutely.
Straight A's, scholarshiped, but they just didn't know. And it's because they had learned how to take a test. They learned how to do the school thing, you know, and not really truly learn.
Yeah, to make it straight A's, but they didn't actually know the material.
Exactly. And so even though he said, I know these are smart students, I got to do something different. And what he did different was he started making the students, now get this, teach each other.
Mm.
So he turned over the physics book and textbook and sections to them, and he flipped the classroom by stopping all the instruction and letting them instruct each other. It's really powerful.
Interesting.
But he got not only student engagement, he got student ownership.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this idea of metacognition, because obviously Eric found a way to make it work for him, but every leader, every teacher has to find a way to make it work in their context too. So let's start with the research though, because we know this isn't just, you know, a great idea we heard about somewhere. There's actually research that's backing this idea.
No doubt about it. So if you looked down through history, you would find that all of the great leaders who truly trained a next generation leader ended up practicing this. They may not have called it metacognition, but this whole passing on of ownership is the key to everything.
Yeah.
So in 2005, the National Academy of Sciences published the research. They summarized everything we know about learning in a report called How Students Learn.
Mm.
Yeah, that would make
that's
me want to read
simple.
It.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So the research culminates in a single word, and it's this word we're talking about today, metacognition.
Wow.
The NAS identified this word as the key to effective learning. And again, as I said, it's metacognition, so it's behind what I know. So it's thinking about thinking. It results in teachers who are the instructors ceasing all the instructing and actually turning it over to the students to dig, to research, to come up with questions, to force each other to really find the answers themselves rather than saying, will this be on the test? You know,
yeah, which I'm sure all our listeners have heard before if they're in the classroom. So,
yeah.
But one of the things that's striking about this is, you know, it's easy enough to explain, I think, but it's really kind of a step away from that more traditional pedagogy that I think a lot of our listeners might be used to.
So, Andrew, you and I we have the unfair advantage of talking about this a lot. Listeners, I want you to imagine, if you will, two columns with three items in each column. And I want to describe for you what I consider to be the traditional classroom or the traditional pedagogy style of delivery that we would use. And then what I would say is the metacognition one, the transformational pedagogy.
Yeah.
So traditional versus transformational. So traditional pedagogy would be the students come in as consumers. I actually talked to a university professor recently that said he talked to the parents of one of his students who said, we're the customer here. My kid deserves an A because we paid the tuition. So the kids come in as consumers.
Yeah.
I bought this class. I deserve an A.
Yeah.
Well, we've conditioned kids to think this way. I'm a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Feed me. It's your job to feed me. I'll open my mouth.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really work too well.
Mm.
In the transformational pedagogy, the students are the creators, not the consumers. So we're giving them a problem to solve. We're offering them a situation perhaps out in their community or out in the world that they have to resolve. And they become the creator of the answer. They become the YouTube video maker, not just the watcher, you know, if you know what
I'm
talking
about. Yeah, absolutely. That's why they love doing it so much,
absolutely.
I think.
So again, number two under these two columns, the traditional pedagogy, the teacher is a commander in front of the class.
Yeah.
In fact, we even use the term classroom management. I got to manage the classroom.
Yep.
There's chaos if I don't manage it. But boy, as a commander, again, I put them in a passive role. I'm the commander, you're not. In the transformational pedagogy, the teacher is a consultant.
Mm.
You're the active one. I'm going to consult with you. And you know, a consultant is maybe not the most active person. They're checking in, but the person they're consulting is doing the work.
Yeah.
So it's a very different mindset.
It really is.
Different behavior. And then number three, under the traditional pedagogy, it fosters complacency on the part of the student. Let's just be honest. If we were honest about the typical classroom in America, the student is more complacent than the teacher. The teacher's the active one.
Yeah.
In the transformational pedagogy, it fosters contribution. The students are contributing, not just passively sitting there. They're participants, not spectators. And this is what every leader wants, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned the word ownership. It sounds like it just naturally kind of creates that ownership.
Yeah, it does.
Well, that's great. I know when we look at classrooms, and there's a lot of classrooms out there who still kind of are living in that more traditional pedagogy. When you look at a classroom, what would you say are like the elements that are missing in the classroom, or maybe even on the athletic field, in student groups and all those different kinds of places? What typically are the ingredients that people are missing?
Yeah, great point. So teachers, coaches, employers, if you're finding a young person not owning what you're trying to teach them, usually there's at least four missing ingredients, at least in my mind. There may be 400, but I know four. The first one is, I think the students, when it works, the students own how they reach the goal.
Mm.
So we set a goal, but I don't dictate it. You own how you reach it. So really, in many ways, it's management by objective. Here's the goal we want to reach. And you get to choose how you do it. It's the new image we're talking about, clean windows.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
I'm not going to tell you five ways to clean the window. I'm going to say we want to end up with clean windows. You figure out how to get the window sparkling clean.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
So they own how they reach the goal. So our job is to expose more than impose there. Number two, the students are active and moving. Call me the master of the obvious, but I think especially for males, they weren't designed to sit still for 7 hours in a classroom.
Mm.
And maybe females would say the same thing too, but we've got to get them active and moving. We have to have the visual and the verbal matching. The movements of our body and our minds have to match what you're lecturing to me up front or what we're doing together. So
yeah, I think a lot of great leaders are discovering the power of habit, for instance. Well, that's actually the name of a great book by Charles Duhigg. And I think, when they put their physical bodies to action, that's when really a lot of the learning starts to become practical and more ingrained.
Well, and you and I both know experience launches great conversation
Absolutely.
And great learning.
Absolutely.
So rather than a talk, how about an experience? Number three, I think another missing ingredient is the verbal must match the visual, which means instead of just a talking head up in front of a classroom or a football field or a manager at a company, they are watching as well as listening. So most students today are visual learners, so they get to, it's show and tell, not tell and tell.
Mm.
So we're showing them and they're seeing something in front of them. Maybe they're doing something too, but the visual and the verbal match. Learning accelerates. In fact, it probably doubles when the visual and the verbal match.
That's great.
And then the fourth one, Andrew, that I think is a missing ingredient is the students actually do the teaching. So this is very risky on the part of the teacher because, you know, what if it's messy? Oh, it will be messy. What if they get it wrong? They will once in a while. But I have a great friend, George, who teaches in Texas at a university. He says, Tim, I'll never forget the time when I switched the pedagogy I learned, I used in my class, and I started letting my students help each other get ready for the test. He said, we had game shows going on in the classroom. We had experiences. We had imaginary sketches going on. But he said, my grades started jumping. The kids' grades, the students' grades.
Wow.
Because they actually did the teaching rather than just the learning.
I love this.
Yeah, it's huge.
Well, I think we've made a really great case for metacognition. But I know if our listeners are anything like you and I, they want to get right to the meat of the thing. And I really think, you know, if we have a great idea, that's wonderful. But if we can't make it practical, then it's not helpful.
Right.
So that's what I love about you. You've always got great ideas. And I know in this case, you have 7 great ideas. To how to kind of practically put this into place. So walk us through those.
Andrew, there's actually 6 out of 7. So listeners, you have to decide which one is not a great one.
Okay, that's
good. Just kidding. Totally kidding. All right, so I recognize many people listening right now may say, well, I don't have the luxury of flipping my classroom. I don't have the luxury of letting my student athletes take over the practice. You know? So how do I do metacognition in my current reality? Great question. Let me throw out some what I consider to be practical ideas that you can do right now, even in your current reality.
Great.
The first one I would say would be create problems without offering solutions. This is something we don't do well. We usually pose a question, and then when it's a little awkward silence, we quickly throw out the answer. So ask, don't tell. Bring up genuine dilemmas in our world and suggest the students consider how to resolve it.
Hmm.
Now, some of our listeners are probably doing this already, but I mean to tell you real life problems, not hypothetical ones, where you do not give the answer and you make them say, if I was in charge of this, what would I do?
Like a case study, sort of.
Yeah, it really is. When my kids were growing up, I would have them once in a while at young ages. I mean, like late elementary school, early middle school, watch the news for 30 minutes, pick one problem. And there were 17 problems on a 30-minute news broadcast.
Yes, there are.
And I would say to my kids, if you were in charge of that, what would you do? And I watched as they got older, they got better and better at coming up with pretty significant answers. But it was a practice. It was a muscle they had to develop.
That's good.
The second idea is at least once a day, refuse to answer a student's question. Now, they're going to get mad.
Yes, they will.
Because we're getting paid to teach, so you better teach me. But instead, encourage everyone in the class to look up the answers and see what they find. This is the meta competency, finding Google things, you know, finding answers, not just memorizing
it
answers.
It may be one of the most practical skills you can give your students, right? It's all the answers are out there. So
that's right. It's pretty timeless. So refuse to answer questions. This is going to be hard if you've been conditioned in front of a classroom to give the answers and you love putting that Superman cape on and flying off to save Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen. So huge. Number 3, create disequilibrium. Now, we talk about this in our Habitudes Intensive quite a bit. You all know this, and some of you do it well, but this is that awkward period of silence between the time a problem is clear and the moment a solution arises. So allow for silence and discomfort. Just let it be uncomfortable. In fact, say, this is going to be weird. This is going to be weird and awkward for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm going to allow for, in fact, not just allow for it, I'm going to create disequilibrium. So I believe, Andrew, this is my belief, real learning only takes place when there's that struggle on the inside of a learner to fight for what they learn. And when they have that fight inside, now they own it.
Yeah.
And it isn't passive learning, it's active learning.
I love that. I love that. You know, I met an educator recently who told me that they started instituting some of this stuff. And one of the first things that happened was the students reacted negatively
to
that disequilibrium problem. Yeah. But what he was saying is we know if we just keep going over time, students are going to realize that that's actually a really good thing to build up that, I don't know what's going to happen next kind of muscle, because that's what life is so much of the time.
It sure is. Absolutely. All right, so here's the next one. Instead of traditional grading of papers, tests, or essays, communicate how many mistakes were made on the project and turn them loose to find each one. So you say, you're not going to say, I put an X on 3 of them, see it's number 3, 7, and 8. You say, there's 3 problems on this. You find which ones aren't right. Well, that's, again, that's causing them to dig. That they won't like it at first because you're making them do the work. By the way, I've talked to an elementary school teacher. This was a while back, but it just came to my mind. The elementary school teacher was actually doing some of this metacognition. And the teacher was walking up and down the rows as they were working on a test. And the student looks up at the teacher and says, "Do you get paid for this?" And the teacher said, "Yes, I do." And he goes, "That's weird. We do all the work." I thought, that is so true. But that's what learning ought to be. It's the work of doing the work. So anyway, instead of the traditional grading of papers where you mark an X in red, just tell them how many are wrong and let them figure out what they got wrong.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. All right, so here's another one. Choose a day and let students plan the entire lesson for the class period. Mm-hmm. In other words, you do, in some sense, flip the classroom in that way, but it's just for a day.
Yeah.
You're going to go back to normal in a little bit, but see what happens. In fact, let them record themselves teaching it and evaluate themselves afterwards. You're Miss Johnson or you're Mr. Johnson. You're in charge now. And like my friend George, maybe it's right before the test and you help them get ready to take a test, but they're doing the teaching.
That's great.
You never learn so much as when you have to be the one that imparts.
So true.
Yeah, the truth.
So okay. True.
All right, a couple others. In your next exam, if you're a teacher, in your next exam, write in the wrong answers in those blanks, the very ones students have given in class. And then let the students grade the test, finding the proper answers. Once again, you're flipping it around to where they're having, you know, a time to look up what's right. But what I love about this idea, if I do say so myself, is they're, you've given them the answers they gave. They thought it was right. And they have to go back and say, oh, I guess that wasn't right. I thought it was 1865. It's not 1865 at all. That happened in AC 63, that Abraham Lincoln gave the Emancipation Proclamation or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, just turn it around for a season.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then one more idea, Andrew.
Okay.
Ask the students, ask your students to pick a topic they feel they've mastered, be it a video game. That would be one that guys would have.
Yep.
A sport or a social media app. Then have them write down how they mastered it and discuss it.
Interesting.
Because you know they did metacognition. They didn't call it that. But to master something, you had to do some thinking about your thinking.
Yeah, evaluate kind of your process and get better and all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. So I know that was rat-a-tat-tat, but I just want to encourage you listeners, you can do this right now in your class period or your practice or your corporate office if you're willing to put up with a little bit of messiness and a little bit more time, but boy, do you get engagement and ownership in the end.
Love it. Love it. Well, Tim, thank you so much for those really, honestly, very practical steps. And I would really encourage listeners, pick at least one of those to try out next week. And I think that it would be really helpful for you. Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is great, but I want more, I often find myself in that situation. We want to encourage you to pick up our latest book, Marching Off the Map. In fact, chapter 7,
yeah.
Right, Tim?
Yeah, that's right.
Is all about metacognition. So it goes into what we talked about, but goes way deeper than we just talked about. So we would really encourage you to pick that up. You can get that at marchingoffthemap.com. As always, if you're interested in being a part of the conversation, giving us some questions you're thinking through or comments on our podcast, we invite you to send us an email at podcast@growingleaders.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.